His eyelids looked heavy too, as if the rhythmic sway of the moving car were lulling him into a trance. Catherine pictured the strange contents of Langdon's bag. Why does the CIA want this pyramid? Bellamy had said that Sato might be pursuing the pyramid because she knew its true potential. But even if this pyramid somehow did reveal the hiding place of ancient secrets, Catherine found it hard to believe that its promise of primeval mystical wisdom would interest the CIA. Then again, she reminded herself, the CIA had been caught several times running parapsychological or PSI programs that bordered on ancient magic and mysticism. In 1995, the Stargate Scan-8 scandal had exposed a classified CIA technology called remote viewing, a kind of telepathic mind travel that enabled a viewer to transport his mind's eye to any location on Earth and spy there, without being physically present. Of course, the technology was nothing new. Mystics called it astral projection, and yogis called it out-of-body experience. Unfortunately, horrified American taxpayers called it absurd, and the program had been scuttled, at least publicly. Ironically, Catherine saw remarkable connections between the CIA's failed programs and her own breakthroughs in noetic science. Catherine felt eager to call the police and find out if they had discovered anything in Kalorama Heights, but she and Langdon were phoneless now, and making contact with the authorities would probably be a mistake anyway. There was no telling how far Sato's reach extended. Patience, Catherine. Within minutes, they would be in a safe hiding place, guests of a man who had assured them he could provide answers. Catherine hoped his answers, whatever they might be, would help her save her brother.
Robert, she whispered, glancing up at the subway map. Next stop is ours.
Langdon emerged slowly from his daydream. Right, thanks. As the train rumbled toward the station, he collected his day bag and gave Catherine an uncertain glance. Let's just hope our arrival is uneventful. By the time Turner Simpkins dashed down to join his men, the subway platform had been entirely cleared, and his team was fanning out, taking up positions behind the support pillars that ran the length of the platform. A distant rumble echoed in the tunnel at the other end of the platform, and as it grew louder, Simpkins felt the stale push of warm air billowing around him. No escape, Mr. Langdon. Simpkins turned to the two agents he had told to join him on the platform.
Identification and weapons out. These trains are automated, but they all have a conductor who opens the doors. Find him.
The train's headlamp now appeared down the tunnel, and the sound of squealing brakes pierced the air. As the train burst into the station and began slowing down, Simpkins and his two agents leaned out over the track, waving CIA identification badges and straining to make eye contact with the conductor before he could open the doors. The train was closing fast. In the third car, Simpkins finally saw the startled face of the conductor, who was apparently trying to figure out why three men in black were all waving identification badges at him. Simpkins jogged toward the train, which was now nearing a full stop.
CIA, Simpkins shouted, holding up his ID. Do not open the doors.
As the train glided slowly past him, he went toward the conductor's car, shouting in at him.
Do not open your doors. Do you understand? Do not open your doors.
The train came to a full stop, its wide-eyed conductor nodding repeatedly.
What's wrong? The man demanded through his side window. Don't let this train move, Simpkins said, and don't open the doors. Okay. Can you let us into the first car?
The conductor nodded, looking fearful. He stepped out of the train, closing the door behind him. He escorted Simpkins and his men to the first car, where he manually opened the door.
Lock it behind us, Simpkins said, pulling his weapon.
Simpkins and his men stepped quickly into the stark light of the first car. The conductor locked the door behind them. The first car contained only four passengers, three teenage boys and an old woman, all of whom looked understandably startled to see three armed men entering. Simpkins held up his ID.
Everything's fine. Just stay seated.
Simpkins and his men now began their sweep, pushing toward the back of the sealed train one car at a time, squeezing toothpaste, as it was called, during his training at the farm. Very few passengers were on this train, and halfway to the back, The agents still had seen nobody even remotely resembling the description of Robert Langdon and Catherine Solomon. Nonetheless, Simpkins remained confident. There was absolutely no place to hide on a subway car. No bathrooms, no storage, and no alternative exits. Even if the targets had seen them board the train and fled to the back, there was no way out. Prying open a door was almost impossible, and Simpkins had men watching the platform and both sides of the train anyway. Patience. By the time Simpkins reached the second-to-last car, however, he was feeling edgy. This penultimate car had only one passenger, a Chinese man. Simpkins and his agents moved through, scanning for any place to hide. There was none.
"Last car,"
Simpkins said, raising his weapon as the threesome moved toward the threshold of the train's final section. As they stepped into the last car, all three of them immediately stopped and stared.
"What the?"
Simpkins raced to the rear of the deserted cabin, searching behind all the seats. He spun back to his men, blood boiling.
"Where the hell did they go?"
Chapter 79. 8 miles due north of Alexandria, Virginia, Robert Langdon and Catherine Solomon strode calmly across a wide expanse of frost-covered lawn.
"You should be an actress," Langdon said, still impressed by Catherine's quick thinking and improvisational skills.
"You weren't half bad yourself," she gave him a smile.
At first, Langdon had been mystified by Catherine's abrupt antics in the taxi. Without warning, she had suddenly demanded they go to Freedom Plaza based on some revelation about a Jewish star and the Great Seal of the United States. She drew a well-known conspiracy theory image on a dollar bill and then insisted Langdon look closely where she was pointing. Finally, Langdon realized that Catherine was pointing not at the dollar bill, but at a tiny indicator bulb on the back of the driver's seat. The bulb was so covered with grime that he had not even noticed it. As he leaned forward, however, he could see that the bulb was illuminated, emitting a dull red glow. He could also see the two faint words directly beneath the lit bulb. "Intercom on." Startled, Langdon glanced back at Catherine, whose frantic eyes were urging him to look into the front seat. He obeyed, stealing a discreet glance through the divider. The cabbie's cell phone was on the dash, wide open, illuminated, facing the intercom speaker. An instant later, Langdon understood Catherine's actions.
"They know we're in this cab. They've been listening to us."
Langdon had no idea how much time he and Catherine had until their taxi was stopped and surrounded, but he knew they had to act fast. Instantly, he'd begun playing along, realizing that Catherine's